too.
Also, we had a button in our trousers, which was the old-fashioned bachelor button, we used to call them, which pressed together in your trousers, which was also a compass, which you could find north. Once you found north, then you had you'd find your other points yourself. And stripped off Starkers, the officer puts them in front of you, said, "What's these?" And you answer, "Well, I did." "Don't know." He said, "You don't know." Ask different questions and what have you, what unit he was working with, and you repeat and repeat rank, name and number. And when you said, "I didn't know that," he said, "We will find out when we get you to Germany what they are." He also told us what unit was operating from and wanted us to verify it.
Was it correct?
We said, he said, "You're working with the Long Range Desert Group, but we will find..." Who was the leader? What was his name? And it's no, nil, nothing. Rank, name, number. Nothing. And, but they told her his name. They knew everything.
Whose name did they give you?
Pardon?
Whose name did they give you?
Greenwood. And, because they've got our pay book, and I was Lord Frank in that, wasn't I? And they grilled me an extra couple of times, but it was only how it was put in your pay book. Instead of being Frank Lord, the pay book was Lord and then Frank.
So they were trying to make out you're a member of the aristocracy, were they?
That's right, yes. It was very hard. And they said, "We will..." Because they threw your clothes back and went back. We're still chucked in solitary confinement then. And then next thing was on the move.
So you weren't beaten up?
Oh, no. There was no... only just to rip your clothes off. You couldn't get them off quick enough. They had a couple of sergeants doing that.
Were they shouting or just talking?
Oh, yeah, we couldn't understand them, you see. I couldn't understand the language. They made you understand. But we went to... It's very difficult to remember where we went. We was moved from there and we finished up in Florence. And there we was all boarded together on a train for a troop train. Full of troops, but we was... I think there was more guards there than there was Long Range Desert Group, and we finished up, went to Munich.
Was this summer or was it autumn by now?
Oh no, that was still good weather there then. You see, in June, we're talking about June. We finished up in Munich, which there was a changeover from Munich there to, and we finished up in Frankfurt.
Did you see, once you got into Germany, did you see, what kind of impression did the country make on you as you passed through Germany?
Well, lots of it, it all seemed peaceful. there was nothing going on. It was just a different country, but we didn't see much of it. We bundled in a train, aren't we? You only see parts of the countryside and all that.
But what about cities like Munich?
Well, Munich
was
not at that time. Not at that time. Not at that particular time.
So
I mean, we was sort of restricted with the area. We was on the station and was heavily guarded and put to another train. And you didn't see nothing much then. I mean, they weren't going to let you have a look round the city and what have you.
What did the attitude of German civilians seem to be towards you? Were they hostile or not?
The civilians was, the guessed who we was and knew who we was, but the actual German soldier, he was a frontline soldier, he was similar to us, because the medical orderly, that's come to another name I've remembered, the medical orderly, he could understand and speak a little bit of German, and he told us what they were saying at different times, but then he had to be careful whether they understood or not, see, so you couldn't say too much. As I say, we was bundled in into another train and taken to Frankfurt in Germany. That's where we was promised the grilling that we would get, and we was put in solitary confinement there in just bunk beds. Just single room and left there. That was 24 hours.
Did you get a grilling in Frankfurt?
That's right, yes. This is where the grilling came. Two guards come along and take Rouse. Well, we knew Rouse, right, up and out. You followed him. Took you into an office, big office. German commander, or whatever he was, officer. And asked you to sit down. And he'd got my report that I was stubborn and wouldn't answer questions. He said, sit down. I said, no, I can stand and do this. Which I was stubborn. He had two sergeants by the door, equivalent sergeants to English sergeants, and he gave us the go-by. Wanted to know this, that. I said 4804996, my army number, which I'll never forget, and name. He said, you will talk. You've got to talk now, you're in Germany, you've got to, and they give you, and then all of a sudden he'll turn over a page and then he'll ask you different questions about, now what unit, you've got to talk, so what unit was you working with? Who was your officer? Who was this? Who was that? And absolutely nil. Name, rank, number, the times I repeated that rank, name and number. Sorry, at first, when I first went in, I must put this one in, he brought 20 English players out of his drawer and asked me to have a cigarette. I said, no thanks. He said, do you smoke? I said, yes, but I don't want one of those. Ah, he said, I've got a report from Verona, the last interrogation, that you were stubborn and what talk. He said, you'll talk here. So different questions he asked. It was still rank, name and number, which I repeat, repeat, repeat. He opened the other drawer opposite to where he'd got the cigarettes out and he took a great revolver out. He said, you know you're going to be shot, don't you? As he said that, there's a shot rings out, we can hear, outside. And I said to him, I said, well, all I know is I'm at your liberty to do whatever you like. All I know, I'm a prisoner of war from the British Army. And he changed his tune. He said, what army was you working with? I said, I've told you my rank, name and number. And he called the sergeants then out. And of course, it frightens the life out of you when you've heard the shot, but you've still got to stand by your guns and don't give them any. They took us back to what they call it, I can't remember what, how long, but was then all put together and taken to the prisoner of war camp then.
Which prisoner of war camp?
We was in Stalag 8B in Poland.
Is this Lambsdorff? At Lambsdorff?
Well, it was in that area. I can't. It's that name rings a bell, you see. But when she was inside there, we didn't go out all that much.
What was it like in Stalagate B?
Well, we felt at first a little bit more freer because you joined hundreds of others that had been there probably from 5 years, 4 years, 3 years onwards, and you still didn't talk of what you was and what have you, but only just an idea of how long the war could last, but you didn't disclose, you didn't know who was in that camp too. But eventually, we felt a little bit sort of better because the Red Cross parcels was coming in and was gradually getting a little bit more food then, which we'd gone without for quite a while. And there was different times where they had the raid on us and what have you, because we used to get the 9 o'clock news every night. It was marvellous, the chaps that could do it and got the bits of radio. And all we learnt was it was chaps that went out to work, and between the French and who they was working with and the bartering with cigarettes and what have you to get parts for this and parts for that. But we got the news, and we actually put guards on to make sure that the Germans wasn't coming in when that was being read. So we got the news every night.
Did you actually listen to the radio yourself?
No.
It was just passed you by word of mouth.
One chap took it and dismantled every little bit and whatever and discarded. All had to be camouflaged. And then he'd read it out to you and then burn that. Every so often, they would have a surge on and everybody out, because they had an idea that we was getting the news, and they'd put you all out in a big compound, take your little bits and pieces, what you've got, put you in this compound and make you stand there 12 hours, whether it was raining, snowing, blowing, or what have you. You had your little bits and pieces, what you just had, until they searched the building what you was in, looking for something. But they had nothing. They couldn't find nothing. They knew it, but they couldn't find it. When you was out on the playground with your Red Cross parcel, you had your bit of food and what have you, and your cigarettes. If you hadn't got no part to hide or anything that was important for the radio or what have you, your cigarettes, the German soldier would come round, and gangs of them, and search your kit, and they'd get hold of 20 cigarettes and say, good, he wanted them. But if you had nothing to hide, you said, see the sergeant, git. And he wouldn't bother. But those that had anything, yeah, good, yeah, you have 20. That went on. But they got worse and worse as it went on, because they was beginning to get desperate.
They were going short.
They was going short. And they was going to stop the rations. And in fact, once the Red Cross parcel, what tin food you had, there was going to make the, you tip it all, there was going to open it all and tip it all in one bowl. And we had, well, there's thousands there then, isn't there? But we had one that could, he'd been there 5 years, he'd learnt fluent German. And he said, and he went out in the middle of the parade ground, and he said, well, as the colonel's spouting all this, or the German colonel, or whatever he was, spouting all this out, that they was going to do this. This bloke got out and he said, you can poke the Red Cross parcels up your jacksie. And everybody clapped, and that stopped the speech from the German then. Everybody was clapping then. We didn't want it. Why mess good food up? But they didn't. But it gradually got worse. From one parcel each, it got to half a parcel each, it got to eight to a parcel. It got very desperate. Then we learnt that the Russians was making a bit of a stand. We was uprooted then, and that's when we started the march. And we actually, I did take a record of that. We went, there was some more than us, but some did 1,000 kilometres, but we did about 740 odd kilometres marching. This is where we saw the destruction through. I remember two of the big names. Leipzig was one. Dresden was another. Was absolutely flattened where we walked through. Very little food on that. That was you might have a drop of skilly soup, they called it, every so often. But we was doing an average of 20 miles a day with nothing. Some chaps was getting worse than others. We carried the weakest. At first, when the Germans was picking them, the weakest up with transport, so it kept them going. And then it come down to the brass tacks. They got desperate. They said, any more that falls out, they'll just be shot. So the strongest of the prisoners carried the weakest so they wouldn't get shot. It got really desperate. You helped every... Well, the weakest was helping the weakest as well. That's how it got to, with hardly any food.
Did you have to be carried yourself?
No. Lucky enough, I was... all right, weak. But as I say, some of the weakest carried the weak as well.
Did you carry anybody?
Oh yes, you helped anybody. It didn't matter if you didn't know he was one of the British. You helped everybody. Everybody that could help, helped. We finished up at a place called Bad Orb.
Whereabouts is that? Do you know?
That was back to Frankfurt area. Outside of Frankfurt, roughly, and we was dumped in a camp there. That was terrible. Was that place was? But
what was so terrible about it?
Well, the facilities. You'd got nothing. You just dumped in, as far as I can remember, great big bunk beds and what have you. We was all lousy by then. Full of lice, right, got in your skin. Some was full of diarrhoea, dysentery. But we could hear guns in the distance. And it wasn't long before we was recaptured by the American tanks came in first. In this camp, it was quite a laugh, because overnight we kept saying, well, it sounds as though they're getting nearer, so something's going to happen soon. We were up the next morning, all the German guards had gone, missing. We got the camp on our own, but we couldn't get out. We was all encaged in barbed wire, about 10 foot high. But another couple of hours, the German tanks was in, and...
The American tanks?
American tanks came in, bashed the barbed wire down and... through chocolate and cigarettes and what have you, just to, they knew what was there.
Was it just British prisoners in this camp?
No, I think it was, there was quite a mixture, but it was mostly British. There was Americans, there was Rhodesian, South Africans. There was different ones, but it was mostly British. And of course, the American relieved us, and then it was a matter of organisation. Then they said the sick and lame and weakest would go first, which everybody agreed. The strongest clapped, let them go. So they transported them out first, Red Cross and everything coming. And they took us to airfield. Now I can't remember the name, and we were that was American transport as well. They took us to a airfield on the coast of France, right opposite England, and there was took in this great camp, and you just walked in as though you were still prisoner of war, and we couldn't work out what was happening, but everybody was lousy. And they said, right, strip off, and you walk there, Starkers and what have you. And there was the American soldiers there, just took your clothes and with it like a pitchfork and chucked it on the fire and was burning it all up. Then he was took in tents, big tents, marquees, and showers and everything in, and had a shower and bit of a delouse and what have you, and checked through with the doctor, and right, you'd be all right, and sorted out from there. And then took us in and gave us a great meal. And then the British picked us up from this airfield back into England, where we kissed the ground and said, that's it.